Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. I am here today with my good friend, Dr. Lynn Geiger, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Dr. Geiger is a psychologist and has been a mentor with me and for me for many, many years. I really appreciate you joining us. What I'd like to do in this first segment is talk a bit about your background, and then we'll move on and talk about really the psychological aspects of aging, if we may. So first, a little bit about you.
As you said, I'm a clinical psychologist, and my as a kid, I grew up always wanting to be a teacher.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and as you notice, there is a considerable overlap between the two. However, I prepared to teach Spanish. And then just as I was graduating college...
¿Habla español?
Just as I was preparing to graduate, I realized, oh my gosh, no one will want to spend the day with me. Because if you count it out, really not many people like to be with their Spanish teacher.
That's correct. True. No, that's true. Correct? I got to give you that.
So I immediately changed careers. Okay. I was very lucky to only briefly contemplate being a lawyer. And then I became a guidance counselor.
Actually, I can see you as an attorney too.
But it's the same thing. Who do you want to hang around with?
Exactly. What's really interesting to me is in the process of doing this podcast, the people that I've interviewed and talked to have been really fascinating. Many of them have reinvented themselves over the years as they've gotten older or really decided what they want to do. Mm-hmm. You've got three kids, four kids. That's what I thought. And it's fun watching them grow up too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the aging process. One of the things I really wanted to do was get a psychologist in here to help us kind of debunk and demystify some of the things about aging. You and I were talking about even the developmental stages of aging. Can you share a little bit with us about what those look like?
So I want to talk a little bit about, particularly Eric Erickson.
Okay.
And he kind of came up with psychosocial developmental stuff. And so this is very old stuff. You know, we're probably talking 60s, 70s stuff. But certainly, because I'm pretty old, in the olden days, we really thought of development stopping at about 21.
Okay.
And it wasn't until everyone like realized that that just made no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And he's actually the person that came up with the phrase identity crisis.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Okay. So if you could kind of put those two pieces together. And so, you know, he goes through the developmental phases of infancy and toddlerhood and kind of elementary school and all that. But for our podcast, your podcast, what we're really interested in is the last two.
Okay.
And so one, again, in his time frame, he was saying for people about 40 years old to 65 years old, the main focus was on what he called generativity.
Okay.
And that's developing yourself more and more as an adult. And so if you think about developing a career path, some people have families, are raising a family. Some people that are not connected with their biological or family of origin, but they form new families. And how people are either comfortable doing that and keep moving forward or become uncomfortable and kind of get stuck and then hopefully get out of that rut and figure out how to move forward.
Go ahead.
And then the last phase, again, his labels were 65 and beyond. And I actually think that he ended at 80.
Oh,
but that was emphasizing our wisdom and using our wisdom. And again, how does one creatively confront end of life. And so those are the two things we're talking about here.
It was really fun. Lynn and I met yesterday for a couple of minutes to kind of chat about the way we wanted to see this podcast go and what we thought would be interesting. And of course, which is pretty typical of us talking, it's sort of, we started in one direction and it took another direction. And one of the things that I was laughing at was that my memory sometimes isn't what it should be. And you were very clear and concise about exactly what worrying about dementia or Alzheimer, or is it just a normal aging symptom to not be able to remember?
So typically what happens is as we age, we have a longer time, what we call latency time, to pull up certain information.
Okay.
So the name of a person, the name of a place, find a word.
Got it.
That takes longer to do.
But we can do it.
But we can do it. And of course, we do it best if we don't get anxious about it.
Okay.
If we try not to think about it, it pops in your brain faster.
Okay.
So compared to younger adults, they do it faster than we do. However, we are actually better at problem solving than younger adults.
Ah, did you hear what she said?
Better at problem solving.
No, that's important.
It is. And that's where our life experience comes in, because we've solved so many problems already. And that's where the wisdom component comes in, that oftentimes at this stage of life, people have a sense of, you know, when they have self-confidence, when they trust their intuition, when they trust that first response.
What's really interesting now that you bring that up is my son's a doctor, my dad's a doctor, 92 and 42,
yeah,
actually. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when they are confronted, we were actually talking about viruses, or we were talking about this, that, or the other, and watching Brandon, my son, go through sort of a decision-making tree. It might be this, it might be this. And my dad was like,
Had it. Yes.
And at the end, it was really fun to watch them go talk about why my dad said that and how Brandon arrived at the same or different conclusion at the end. So I
and
hear what you're saying.
Exactly what I'm talking about. That's the advantage that as we get older, that's the advantage we have.
Which is really interesting to me when we're talking about it from a cultural point of view, because I think the older I get, the more, and I hate to say wise, but the more anchored I feel, or the more my decisions are less based on emotion and they're much more blended between emotion and logic. Do you find that that's true for most people? And that's what wisdom is?
That's a great question. I think that's one component of wisdom, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's the, you know, you want to get to that place where you trust yourself more.
Okay.
Right? Which is what your dad did in solving that problem.
Right. I don't even think he thought about it. No. I think he just intuitively said, this is exactly what it is.
So I want to add, because you had brought it up, the dementia is more like you do something strange. Like you walk in the house and you put your car keys in the freezer.
Okay.
Okay. That's not, so that's a different type of memory problem. That's like not self-monitoring, not being aware of what you're doing, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I forget good old what's her names I knew in high school.
Got it. Exactly. Or I walk into my pantry and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what was it that I...
That's very typical.
Is it pretty
right.
typical?
And typically, either if you stand there, you'll remember, or if you go back to where you came from and start again, you'll remember.
What I'd love to do is, we're going to take a break here in about 30 seconds, is to come back and chat with you a little bit about the folks that you see that are, let's say, 40 and over, 50 and over. What are some of the typical things that they are curious about, worried about, and want to work through?
Mm-hmm.
So stay with us. We'll be right back here on Aging in Place. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here on Aging in Place. Once again, we're here with Dr. Lynn Geiger, and we're talking about, well, you just said it, coping with getting older, coping
right.
with the stage in life that corresponds, I guess, to your chronologic age, which is kind of an interesting thing to even talk about, because I'm 66, and I'm not sure what I thought 66 would be or feel like, but I'm not. On the one hand, I don't really feel like I'm old, and on the other hand, my chronologic age is pretty evident. So who do you, when you see folks?
So what, so let's just go with that first. I mean, I think that, you know, the baby boomer generation, our definition of old has changed.
Yes, that's true. Okay.
So, you know, and remember 10 years ago, we were just saying, you know, 50 is the new 40.
Okay. Right? Now 66 is the new 40. We're going to be 86.
So, so we have to pay attention to that aspect of people have focused more and more upon, you know, how to stay youthful.
Okay.
And there's good aspects of that, right?
Right.
But there are some not so good aspects where people get like a little crazy and...
Talk to me about that, because I hear what you're saying.
I mean, I think that that's, you know, right now the American culture is very focused on always having a youthful appearance. And sometimes we go overboard with that.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So so I want to pay attention that in our discussion, we try to keep a balanced sense of that. Right?
And I hear what you're saying. I think if I hear you correctly, you're saying, and I'm just being really honest, I've always been in the sun. I have wrinkles now. I don't really mind. I have earned them.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so I guess I had a choice. I guess we all have choices. We can embrace it and move forward, or we can do what we can to.
Right. And so again, now that's going back to your original question. That's part of the what do I accept and how do I cope? Right?
Ah.
And your sense is I accept that I've earned these wrinkles, so it's okay for me.
Right.
And then you're able to cope. But for another person, it might be, I cannot accept these wrinkles. These are too disturbing to me. They make me too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I would like to have some type of treatment for them. Right?
That makes perfect sense.
Yes. And so, and it's more, you know, what is a person's issue and how do they manage that issue? And I think you had mentioned on the break, what about someone who now is all of a sudden being bossed around, you know, an 80-year-old woman or a 60-year-old woman being bossed around by her son.
Right. 50-year-old son or 40-year-old.
One of my favorites is when all of a sudden, I don't hear this from men, of course, the woman tells me that someone in her family is always taking her elbow as they cross the street.
Oh.
You know, and so that, do you interpret that as a nice, friendly, protective gesture? They don't want me to fall and break a hip? Or is it, oh, they think I'm demented and I can't cross the street by myself?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because somebody at Kroger's the other day was like, ma'am, can I help you? And I'm like, what? I think I was lifting up some water or whatever, right? And I was like, yeah, I almost was taken back by it. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
I never even thought about that.
Right, right. So it's and how do you interpret that message, right? Mm-hmm. And then what do you do about it? Because, you know, the woman that now shirks her son off roughly with her elbow, uh-huh. you know, is highly offended.
Right.
And it's I want her to think, no, wait a sec. You know, is this part of my aging? And if he wants to help me, but not decide that I have lost my brain and I can't think independently anymore. Oh, okay, I can cope with that. But if it's like, no, he's telling me I can't look both ways and see if there's a car coming, you know.
Do you find that men and women who do come to you that are over 50 are looking at very different things than, let's say, young adults or adolescents? Are they feeling more depressed or fearful with their mortality? Because I know at 17, 18, when we see, a lot of times when you see kids, they're like, yeah, I'm immortal. And now it's more, okay, how am I going to successfully live like this? Or what are some of the things that
you see? So I think there's two pieces here. I think that almost all of us are impacted by our family and what's going on, and where is our family in the life cycle?
Okay.
So if someone is a grandparent, who is middle to late 70s, now raising grandchildren because the parents aren't available.
Mm-hmm. Which happens a lot, doesn't it?
At a huge amount, really huge. So that person is at a life cycle of, I'm still parenting.
Okay.
I'm still raising children. So they're really still focused on that phase of the life cycle. Mm-hmm. Very different from someone the same age who, you know, whose grandchildren are in their 20s.
Right.
Right. And is more focused on end of life, as you say, mm-hmm. and how do I understand death and that piece. And the same can be said of a person who's 50. It really depends so much on where the life cycle is. Right.
help me with this. My dad's 92, and we talk a lot on the podcast. I've got a 2-year-old granddaughter and a 92-year-old dad, and yeah. The similarities are pretty amazing. But I find one of the things that concerns me with my dad, and I hear this more and more with folks that are a little bit older, is my dad will be saying, you know, I just miss my friends. I can't really relate. I love you, Debbie, but I can't really relate to you. And I definitely don't relate to the 40-year-olds. And now I've got a lot of grandchildren. And it's the relating to peers, I think, that seems to be causing.
I think there's two really important pieces of what you're talking about. One, as we get older, we are confronted with more and more loss. Loss of mobility. We talked about loss of memory. Loss of physical strength. Mm-hmm. Loss of friends.
Big time.
So it's huge. And that's a big piece of it is how do you adapt to all that loss? But the other piece of the important psychological piece is, yes, it's really good to develop younger friendships with people who are younger than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And once you reach adulthood.
Again, use your wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you do a lot of reframing or getting people to see things through a different lens? I mean, if someone comes in and says, look, I just can't relate to anybody. I've lost all my friends, had to move out of my home, retired in a place I don't really know. Because that's, I mean.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What are some tools, I guess, or techniques that you like to see people have in their arsenal of coping mechanisms?
So this sounds so silly, but it's really important. As we get older, our muscles in our face sag, like our eyes, we have to have readers
right.
and all that stuff. And so people feel that they're smiling and they are not smiling.
Oh, interesting.
So one of my biggest tips is you have to actually look in a mirror to see when it feels like you're smiling.
Okay. Oh, I never even thought about that.
Right?
Yeah, it's true though.
So,
yeah.
So the much older person mm-hmm. Walks down the hallway in a residential facility
sure.
or walks in the street and they believe they're smiling. And the rest of us think that's an angry old man. Right?
What? Yes.
So of course, to attract people to you, you know, the smile is the most instinctive thing that attracts us to people. So there's a very simple thing to stay in touch. So even if that person is at the grocery store and smiles at a clerk, and then they have that brief social interaction, that improves their day, right?
Well, and that brings me, and I know we've only got about a minute, that brings me to a question for you about isolation.
Well, we all know that's a dangerous, it's a high risk factor for things not going well. Both your health not going well, your end of life piece is not going well. Isolation is very psychologically unhealthy.
We're going to take a break again. We're going to come back. One of the things I would love to ask you is your thought, and I have a bias on this because I'm all about this, about people coming to see a psychologist, healthy people coming as they go through different stages in life. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Once again, we're here with Dr. Lynn Geiger.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. Our guest today is Dr. Lynn Geiger. We've been talking about some of the psychological aspects of the aging process. We've been talking about 2-year-olds and 92-year-olds and stages of development. It's really interesting. And before the break, I asked you a quick question, and that was your feelings on people coming to a psychologist when they're not feeling bad, when they're just going through sort of life's issues.
I think this is really beneficial. You know, part of my job is to be a good consultant. You know, and just as you are, you know, I am not good with style and color and stuff like that. And if I want my home to look really well put together, it's probably worth my time and money to have an interior
professional
designer mm-hmm. consult with me, mm-hmm. right? Well, I think the same about the questions that you're asking. that if someone has a very, very close friend or a very, very close family member that can non-judgmentally help them talk through that stuff, that's wonderful. But many of us don't nowadays. And especially many people don't want to share this with their adult children.
Because I don't want to judge and I don't want my kids to worry.
Right. They don't want them to worry, correct?
Right.
Yeah, huge. And so I think in that way, coming to you as a person like myself, a psychologist, a mental health professional, as a consultant, you know, you're not coming 20 times.
How do I shift the mindset for some folks that are a bit older? For me, again, I totally believe in the evidence-based psychology, and I think it is a science. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when I've talked to older people, there's a hesitancy to come and talk to a trained professional. How do we shift that point of view?
I think we continue to address that issue of stigma.
Okay.
And separate out illness versus, okay, you were talking about healthy people coming in.
Got it. Right? Yes. That's what we're talking about.
And
yes.
To me, if a person has an illness, I want them to get some kind of treatment.
Correct. And now that we know that the brain is an organ.
Correct.
And we can treat it.
Correct.
And there are evidence-based,
right,
interventions that actually work.
Right. So it's the same thing. If someone has diabetes and they say, I'm just going to manage my diet and exercise and that's all I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And if a physician, a healthcare practitioner says, no, you really need insulin. You really have to work on this. Everyone would agree, probably, let's follow the physician's treatment plan.
Oh, right? Yes, that makes perfect sense.
So it would be the same to me if someone has depression.
Right? Okay.
And I'm not saying, okay, so you have to take medicine for depression, but, the single most effective factor in treating depression is exercise.
Oh, it is, isn't
right?
it?
Of course, I can't get depressed people to exercise. But,
right.
Well, to get a full treatment plan. So, I think part of it is just to continue to come back to the stigma issue with people. It's like, it's not like in the olden days, it was all about willpower, right? I'll power my way through diabetes.
Yes.
How about no?
It was willpower. Right. I'm not depressed. I can get through this, or just, I need to pull myself up by my bootstraps.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And we know more now. We know a lot more. So that's that stigma piece. And then the other is for healthy people. If you are someone that, so, understands yourself better and solves your problems better by talking out loud. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a trusted person to do that with, mental health professional is great. Although there are also, and I want to add, there's many, many clergy that are also great at this.
Okay.
Just finding someone.
Is it more about, for you, the objectivity piece, the resourcing piece, the fact that you have sort of tips, tools, techniques that can help people? How do you view yourself with your client? Are you a team?
We are a team. We are partners in working towards the goal together. Absolutely. I am a very, very strong proponent of evidence-based treatment. Mm-hmm. I really think the science behind different treatment matters. And just like I don't want to go into the operating room and have someone say, oh, well, today I feel fine repairing this. Yeah. Now we're here for a specific focus. Still, I want to come back to the strongest component of all the components that makes treatment successful is the therapeutic relationship. So to me, that empathy, active listening, being genuine, that's the strongest component. Mm-hmm. And especially when you are talking about something deeply powerful to a person, for end-of-life issues, mm-hmm. or how do I adjust and adapt to this season of loss, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's the other component that's really critical.
What do you share with people when it comes to knowing who to go to, how to find someone?
Well, I really think it's get the vibes.
Okay.
You ought to, when you talk on the phone, you can tell the vibes. And even if you don't talk with the person themselves, you talk with their office staff. The office staff so often mirror
sets the tone of the whole. That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
and I know in the last few minutes you wanted to kind of go back to the developmental stages a little bit.
So you know, if you think of those stages, you know, these last couple of stages are a time when we are exquisitely examining ourselves internally.
Okay.
We're asking about our own psychology, our own functioning. We are assessing our own anxieties, more so, except for adolescence, more so than any other phase. Okay, we all know infants aren't doing that.
No.
Toddlers aren't doing that.
Right. New mothers aren't doing it. They're just trying to survive.
Right. Right. Uh-huh. And especially I love talking about end of life because, you know, people with their words are focused on what do I think happens when I die?
Okay.
But with their fears, they're talking about the step before that. What are my worries about those last moments of the dying death process, which here for us is usually about pain.
Yeah, I was just going to say pain.
And dignity. You know?
Makes sense.
And slipping away of independence. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. How do I make that transition of the healthcare proxy? When do I make that shift of I have to let go and I can't make those healthcare decisions myself?
Can you be an advocate for a client in helping kind of, I'm not saying guide the process, but at least be there to answer some of the questions?
I think it's more important that I ask the questions.
Ah.
And they have the answers.
Do you think we know the questions? Obviously, that's what you're saying. You're saying what you can do is actually maybe bring the questions from an unconscious or I just feel anxiety. I'm not really sure what I'm feeling, where you might have the experience and acumen to say, okay,
it sounds like you might be talking about this. Or,
yes.
So here's a couple of things. I'm wondering if it's one of these things.
How do you feel about a client coming in? Again, if I'm 66, my dad's 92. What about family kinds of counseling sessions or therapeutic sessions, psych sessions?
I love those. That's what I adore. Right?
What helps you when a client comes to see you? What kind of information can really arm you to be your best professional? In other words, what do you want me to come armed with? Do I need to have a goal? Do I need to just have the willingness to kind of explore and be there?
I don't think I have any real demands or expectations about that because of course, different people come in with different stuff mm-hmm. and then I kind of go from there.
And you guys can't see Lynn, but it was really interesting when I just asked that question because she was like, I don't really think you need to be armed with anything. I mean, that's exactly what you looked at me like. Yes. I don't really understand even the question.
Right, right. You know, Sean, I love the people that come in and they have
a checklist, right.
They've written out their narrative of their yeah. life or here are my goals. Right?
Okay, right.
But I'm equally comfortable with someone who says, I don't really know what's wrong with me, but there's something wrong.
Okay.
And I'm equally comfortable with someone who's saying, you know, I want to talk about this stuff and I don't want to talk about it with my priest because I know what he'll tell me.
So what I hear you say is come sooner rather than later.
Oh, of course.
Oftentimes that's the best time to come is before things get to a point of crisis. And I think if we can convince people of that, I mean, that's the whole name of the game.
But still, if you can't come before the crisis, come after.
Okay.
So you can process it.
Okay, and that makes sense too. In our last remaining couple of minutes, if people are interested, again, since this is national and maybe want to talk to you or are curious, do you have a phone number or website or anything that you would like to share?
Sure. I have my website, which is my name.
Dr. Lynn Geiger.
And I use my middle initial, so it's Lynn and then E, Geiger.
Okay.
PhD.
At gmail.com. Okay. I really appreciate it. I want to thank all of you for listening today. I think I got a lot of information. I think you will too. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. Pop the tops. Do you have toddlers and school-aged children who love to dress themselves, but just haven't developed your sense of fashion yet? Or maybe even older seniors or ones who are colorblind? To arrange outfits on hangers, which also means more closet space, use a soda pop can tab. Just slip the hanger through the hole using the hook, and then hang your matching piece through the other opening. No more struggling with coordinating clothes. You can even hang labels with the days of the week on them, too. Who knew making your kindergartner smile was so easy? Now if you can only find that missing shoe.
Dr. Lynn Geiger is an amazing interview. And of course, there are some wonderful takeaways from every speaker that we have. Today especially, I heard, we baby boomers, we're not going down gracefully. We haven't admitted yet that we're actually aging. So my takeaway is this: enjoy every minute. Don't hesitate to talk to a professional if you're feeling isolated, lonely, or you're just not sure what's going on. Thank you all for listening today here on Aging in Place Podcast for any stage in life.
Aging in Place Podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.